This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Third hour, Darren Donick and Chase. Although it's Darren McFarland, me, Willie Donick, and East Nashville. Chase will be hosting the afternoon show with the GM, Floyd Reese. That's all coming up at 2 o'clock today. We now bring in Vince Ferrara in Knoxville at Vince Sports, WNML, at Vince Sports on Twitter, WNML, the sports animal there in Knoxville. And Vince Ferrara every week is powered by TechCore, providing you top-of-the-line IT service and Turner Security Systems right here in Nashville. Vince, how you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for TechCore, and thankful I had SEC football on my TV this past weekend.
Yeah, no doubt about it. By the way, real quick, Mark Stoops today saying that the SEC presidents are voting, or I guess re-voting, on the rule transferring in conference. He said Kentucky is going to vote for it to happen. I think Tennessee would vote for it to happen. Probably Auburn would vote for it to happen. Where do you think this is going? And if it is passed, you know, what's going to be the latest on Cade Mays?
Well, Jeremy Pruitt was asked about that, and he's like, I hadn't heard of that. So if maybe that's something that they're doing on their own. I don't know how you don't communicate that. So that sounds strange to me. If
right,
you're,
yeah.
If you're doing this to try to help the coaches out. Oh, by the way, we're doing this. But, look, Greg Sankey said that what it came down to is the existing transfer rule within the NCAA, within the SEC. He said the presidents and the ADs are the ones that didn't want to allow in-conference transfers. And a couple of years ago, they amended that rule to have a couple of exceptions. And one was for grad transfers, and the other was for a school with NCAA sanctions, like Van Jefferson allowed to go from Ole Miss to Florida. So those are the only exceptions to the rule. And Greg Sankey's like, well, if you guys don't want this rule, then we need to change the rule. But right now, we have this rule. And my thing is these are unusual circumstances in 2020. So I know that's the rule that they had, but you override that. I think the league should just override it and say, all right, we're going to let these players through this year. I know this is the rule that you guys voted on. We're going to readdress this after the year, and then we're done at this point. And then we'll revisit it. Now, I guess the alternative to not breaking a rule from the SEC would be to have the presidents vote on it again. So I don't know why we would have to go to this extent in order to get this pushed through. But it clearly impacts multiple schools and three different players. So it's not just for Tennessee. And to me, it's silly to hang it up on this existing rule with the circumstances of 2020. I don't know how it's going to play out. My guess is they'll figure it out eventually, and then the players will have missed a couple of games, and that'll be sort of the NCAA-ish unintended or indirect punishment for transfer of a couple of games.
What did you make of quarterback play Jarrett Garantano?
Mixed bag. I thought that he definitely missed on a number of throws, and he missed on them high. He said he was leaning back some and kind of anticipating rush. I don't know why he would do that. Yeah, he had some pressure, but the guy is too experienced. You know, he said he's going to go in there, work his butt off, and go get back to work. Man, I'm telling you, there's – people are tired of it. We probably got more Garantano complaints in the post game or during the game in the post game than any other type of comment on the ball game.
Really?
The people that are fed up with him saw the same thing. And I didn't really see great improvement from him. Maybe a little bit in terms of anticipation, but, you know, his anticipation might have been a little bit better, but his accuracy wasn't there with his fundamentals. But I don't think for Tennessee to do anything special this year, I don't think you saw enough of an improvement or any improvement from Garantano to make you think that they can, you know, do special things. I think he was indicative of the entire team overall, and that's inconsistent in the game, but did enough to win, which is actually consistent to what they've been doing under Pruitt in the last seven games.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't that his best trait is he does enough to win? It's never, you know, it's kind of going back to what we were talking earlier about the Titans. Vince is, okay, they're 3-0, and right now you would say they haven't won any beauty contests
right.
Because they've won three games by a total of 6 points. But you're 3-0. So I would say the same thing with him. He typically doesn't win a lot of beauty contests with his play, but they keep winning when he's under center. I mean, remember, they've tried to remove him several times, and it always comes back to him, and he gets it done. You know, I think one of the plays that also surprised me late, you know, they're in the red zone, and, you know, he's got actually like two receivers crossing the middle, and he fires it like it was like a Brett Favre pass where he threw it about 185 miles per hour, and there was no chance. I mean, I guess it wasn't going to get picked off because there was no chance anybody could catch it.
Well, it's interesting on that throw. I thought of something his summer quarterback coach, Tony Rasiopi, told me, and has told me multiple times, but told me in the summer that he had been working on with Garantano. And that's in some of those intermediate shots to put touch on the ball. He didn't have to throw a fastball at 100 miles per hour every time. And he didn't execute what they worked on in the offseason. So, yes, there's things that he can be better on. It's crazy. It seems like when he gets smacked in the face, has pressure in his face, things look their bleakest, is when he comes through with a clutch throw. And even on that flea flicker that went wrong, kind of that improvisation to be able to get it to Eric Gray and let him make a play down into the inside the 5-yard line. It's the basic easy things sometimes elude him, but when it's the toughest and harshest on him, he comes through, and especially when there's not the expectations for him at that time, it's just a crazy characteristic that he has. But you're right, much like the team, they seem to figure it out, and I don't know if someone else would, if he is inconsistent within a game, how much if he'd get yanked again. My guess is he would if somebody's ready, but I don't know that anybody's ready right now with Harrison Bailey having missed so much time, the 5-star true freshman, with contact tracing, and Maurer banged up, Shroud, you know, I don't know if he's at that level. So I think for a while, it's probably Garantano's show for now.
There was a lot of concerns of what would the wide receiver play look like with all their losses. I thought the wide receiver play was better than I expected. What about you?
Well, it didn't involve as many of the freshmen as I think originally Tennessee would have hoped. And part of that is because the wide receiver, that group, along with the DBs and the offensive line, have been the positions most hit hard by contact tracing and players being out. So those guys didn't have an opportunity to really show what they can do enough in practice for the trust level to be there. Jalen Hyatt got a couple of snaps, who I thought is going to be the best of those freshmen. Garantano sailed a throw intended for him. But, you know, Pruitt thinks that those guys are going to come along as soon as they get some more reps. None of them even showed up on the 2D. But I think, to your point, Valus Jones Jr. was very impressive as a wide receiver. He was more of a return man at USC, and he showed that they can use him with some run after catch, use him in those underneath routes, a little bit of a safety valve that you normally would have with a tight end, and they don't have really a much of a pass-catching threat at tight end right now. So if you can use Jones in that role along with the running backs, I think you can offset that to a certain degree. But, yeah, Jones Jr. and then the Brandon Johnson, fantastic one-handed catch he had. Josh Palmer getting open. I thought that was one of the keys to the game, Darren, going in. I said it in my blog that South Carolina has as good a corners as there is in this league with McQuamu and Horn. And I thought Tennessee did a pretty good job. If Garantano doesn't fail some throws, they have much better stats. And that game is probably put away a lot earlier than what it was. But it was a good day for the receivers.
All right, let me be Debbie Downer for just a second and just ask. I know, shocking. Let's first here on Darren Donick and Chase from me. But I mean, I brought this up last week. I said I was going to ask it to you because I just am a little. It's a little bit of a head scratcher for me. Just to be perfectly honest, I just want to know how it was received in your market and on the Sports Animal there in Knoxville. But I didn't really understand the need to announce this extension and raise for Jeremy Pruitt before the season even began. Two more years for a contract that wasn't up until 2023 in the middle of a global pandemic. I got to be honest. I didn't think it was a very good idea at all. What's been the reaction there? And why? Like, it's not like you're in danger of, like, why was there this great need to rush and get this news out there before they had played, you know, their first game of the season? It's not like Jeremy Pruitt. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it's not like they may end up having a fantastic season. What's his record? One game over 500 since he's been the coach? I mean, it's not like, you know, LSU's going to fire Ed Orgeron and they're going to come pluck Jeremy Pruitt. So what was the need? So how was it received there?
I don't think there was much of a negative reaction. I think some people were probably a little bit surprised because, look, for some, the jury is still out. For others, they completely believe in Jeremy Pruitt. So it's not a consensus for all the fan base. I think more people support him and believe in him. I mean, heck, the team has a 7-game win streak. So I think the supporters are going to be in greater numbers. But I agree, it's probably not the best look during this period of time to announce an extension. But my guess is that they probably felt like this was something necessary from a recruiting standpoint. And maybe
why? If that was the case, Vince, why? Like, because they're afraid he's going to take another job somewhere?
Well, no. If you're being negatively recruited, that you know, if they have a disappointing year, that they could move on from Pruitt. Now, I don't believe
But who's thinking that? Nobody. Like, it's a perfect in-between. He's not on any kind of a hot seat, and he's not a guy that's about to take a job at the next place. So, therefore, that's why I don't get about.
And he's not in a final year. I mean, 2023. Yeah. I mean,
Right. It's not that he's on a hot seat, but it's the show of stability and support. So even if he's not on the hot seat and people aren't complaining about him or he's on the brink of losing his job, that doesn't mean that can't be used against you in recruiting. People will negatively recruit anything they can find. So if that's something that was important to them and they felt like, hey, let's do this, we can end any doubt. I don't think there's doubt, but I'm just saying that could have been a reason for it to announce it. I also don't know that it was rushed. I think it may have been slid in there. This might have been something that's been in the works for a while, and they wanted to wait until they were right on the brink of the season so maybe it wouldn't get the attention that normally it would have at the peak of the uncertainty of a football season and all that. So, I don't think it's something that was received negatively, but it is, it was an interesting move. It, considering everything that people are going through, it was not, when so many people are losing jobs and there's budgets and everything, it's not a great look. And I don't know that there's been a whole lot of people that have done that, coaches around the country, but that doesn't mean they're not getting those extensions. It just means that they may not be announced.
Talking to Vince Ferrara. So Vince, you do an incredible amount of preparation of what you think you're going to see from the roster, but knowing that when you can't watch a lot of the preseason, that there's going to be some surprises, particularly this year with guys in and out of practice. So all in all, when you saw the product on the field, what was the biggest surprise that you didn't see coming?
I'd say the performance of DeAndre Johnson, one of those outside linebackers. He was named the SEC Defensive Lineman of the Week. He's an outside backer, basically playing the jack / defensive end, had his hand down quite a bit. And he was one of those guys, he and Kevon Bennett, that were the biggest guys that you pointed to as needing to step up and provide pass rush in place of Darrell Taylor, who was by far the best pass rusher last year. And Johnson, with 2.5 sacks, with 2.5 tackles for loss, 6 tackles in the game, most sacks by a Tennessee player since Darrell Taylor against Kentucky in 2018. And that was he had a forced fumble as well. I mean, he had a really nice game. That's the best game I've seen him play. It was only his 4th start in his time at Tennessee. And so I had a little bit more faith in him than Kevon Bennett because of his consistency. And Bennett will flash and then be very quiet or miss an assignment or something. I think he's more consistent, but that was the kind of play, game-changing type of plays that this defense desperately needs. Now, we'll see if he's able to maintain it, but that level of performance was probably the most surprising to me from what we saw is how well he played.
How encouraging is it? This will be my last question here for you, Vince. So from a general stance, they probably had some chances to put the game away. You're probably sitting there going, they could have won the game easier. It shouldn't have come down to the freak bounce on the punt, which sort of bailed them out from having to make one last stop there. But they look like a better team than South Carolina. That's got to be encouraging first step.
No doubt, Willie, because it was an ugly start, as everybody saw, and there are tons of things that this team can get better on. I mean, tons of things. I didn't think their offensive line was as good as you expected it to be, even though they didn't have Cade Mays, Wanya Morris, who's one of their 5-star sophomores. He didn't start the ball game, played a little bit at right tackle and left tackle, but they just weren't the kind of dominant O-line that I think most of us expected from that group being the strength of the team. And, they're a bust in coverage. They didn't have a couple of key pieces. And Sean Schamberger, their starting star nickelback, he was out. Pruitt wouldn't divulge what it was. It's either contact tracing or an injury. He said it wasn't discipline. And then Darrell Middleton announced before the game that he was out because of some health issues, and then he would be back. So they weren't full strength. They had to move Bryce Thompson from corner to safety. And, they had first-time inside backers in Crouch and Banks, who at times had some good plays and then other times had struggles. They had the missed throws on offense. And so they had a number of tons of things they can clean up. But if you have coachable points and you can get better and come out of it with a road win in the SEC, I think you feel good about it, and I'm with you. I think they look like the better team, and a team that finds a way. And even if they made it harder on themselves, like they typically do, they find a way, and they've had four in their seven straight wins, now the longest winning streak in the SEC, by the way. Four of those have been one possession wins. So they figure out ways to win, and I think it's something that Pruitt's evolution as a head coach, and now not having to super micromanage the coaching staff. He trusts Derek Ansley to run that defense. He trusts Jim Chaney to run the offense. Now Pruitt in his third year can be the head coach and focus on relationships, on the big picture, on strategy in the game, as opposed to being in the weeds where he was his first year, especially where there wasn't that trust in those guys. So that's the evolution of the program, of Pruitt, and it's paid off with some of these closer wins. And I think it is encouraging that they weren't great, yet they still won. And then they're clearly favorite to win in their home opener against Missouri on Saturday before the schedule starts to toughen up a little bit.
Vince Ferrara, powered by TechCore, providing you top-of-the-line IT service and Turner Security Systems right here at Asheville. Vince, we got a roll. We got Mike Vrabel coming up next. Appreciate the visit. Have a great week.
All right, you guys do the same. Appreciate you having me.
At Vince Sports on Twitter, he's with the sports animal WNML there in Knoxville. Mike Vrabel, just around the corner here on 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, let's head over to the Titans facility and let's hear from their head coach, Mike Vrabel.
It's much more valuable than losing by one. But we have to be able to play better, to try to not be in those tight games. But I do think that our ability to function when the games are tight, or maybe when we're behind or have to execute these situations, that can only help you. It's not what we want to rely on, but it's something that we feel like we gain confidence that the players don't panic and we're able to execute the situations as they come up down the stretch.
Jim?
And Mike, it seemed like Jeffrey Simmons was especially active, especially disruptive on Sunday. What'd you see from him, and was it potentially his best game in his young career?
I think it probably was. I think he's just getting a lot more comfortable. I think he's feeling better. He plays extremely hard. His technique is really improving for so long. And again, in college, I think Jeffrey just relied on his natural ability, which is very high. And now I think he's really started to improve and understand how his technique can help him affect the game and make plays for us and be disruptive.
Trump?
Yeah, Coach, you had mentioned yesterday about no finger pointing. And when you have a team that could go through that adversity like that and never have that finger pointing, well, what's the key? Like, what's the formula to making sure that the guys just stay, as you said, not being front runners?
You know, you try to coach it, you try to preach it and understand how valuable it is, that the games are long, that each unit and each player is pulling for each other, that when adversity hits, we have the ability to, get things fixed and go out and keep playing. And so I think that's a testament to the leaders on this team, to the players that we have, and what we're trying to build.
And being that guy that keeps that ship steering in that direction, is that something that you encounter that in the past stops, like whether it be with the Patriots, Chiefs, or especially the Steelers?
I think you learn and you know, from every place that you've been, and those are great places. And, you know, even coaching, you know, at Ohio State and the ability to coach at in Houston. You know, you want to just try to remain, as focused as you can on each and every play and not panic and just remind the players that, fix the issues and get back to work. I think that's the most important thing that you can do during the game.
Thank you.
Buck?
Yeah, Mike, I guess when did you find out that Coach Bowen wouldn't be able to travel with you, and how do you guys go about contact tracing in a situation like that?
So I think just to touch on Buck's question, you know, Shane Bowen wasn't with us and is not currently with us as it stands today, because of the COVID protocol that we have to follow. That would have been, you know, I guess Saturday morning, you know, early Saturday morning when we get those results back. And, you know, then we make, you know, plans and work through all those things, whether that be any sort of situation. That's our job, is to be able to handle it and to function and move on and make sure that the team has everything it needs.
Thank you.
Eric? Hey, Mike, just looking to get an update on Lawan. How's his shoulder? Do you expect him to miss any time? And also, how do you think Tyson Braille filled in for him?
Not much to offer on Taylor. But I would say that Ty, other than, you know, a few plays in there, did a really nice job, was proud of the way that he stepped in there and played, which is not easy, you know, against, you know, a player like Ngakoue. And so, you know, he jumped right in there, was ready to go, knew what to do. And again, had a couple plays that, you know, I'm sure he'd like to have back, but then I thought he played pretty well.
John Glennon.
Yeah, Mike, a couple guys made their debuts for you there on Sunday. Wondering what your thoughts were on both Beasley and Darrington Evans.
You know, it was good to get those guys out there. Got to continue to add on to what they're doing by you know, working them in there at practice more and expanding their roles. You know, but it was good to get those guys out there, and each and every week, the more guys, the more players that we can have available, the better off we're going to be. So we'll keep working those guys, and we'll keep giving them opportunities to develop roles on our team.
Sure. And one follow on the Bowen front, I guess, who, you know, in the immediate situation, who takes care of the edge guys, the outside linebackers, on sort of a day-to-day basis, whether it's meeting rooms or on the field?
Well, Matt Edwards has been helping with that group. You know, I help with that group, and Shane does. So, you know, there's a couple of us that do that, and so we'll continue along that process here in the near future.
Thanks.
Corey?
Coach, last week you used the words edge, wall, and swarm. What was the problem of those three this week, and what do you, how do you go about addressing it?
I mean, we got to practice it. We got to execute it. Far too many X plays, far too many missed tackles. You know, it was, you know, you're going to play good players every week in this league, good backs, good receivers, good quarterbacks. And so it's good skill players. You know, we have to do a better job. You know, we can't have guys there and not execute or not fit things properly, and that has to get fixed.
Paul,
can you talk us through a little bit, Mike? Without Shane, I imagine you take on the play calling there. Is there anything that you then had to delegate? How did things change for you personally, and what kind of changes did you have to make? I'm sure you had the contingencies ready for such a circumstance. Can you talk us through a little bit of what they were?
You know, I think at that point in time, I think Craig Aukerman takes on probably a little larger role if I'm over with the defense for an extended period of time, but you know, for the most part, not much changed. I tried to, you know, still stay involved with the offense. But, you know, if something would happen, you know, or we needed a timeout, Craig had a headset and would be able to, you know, call timeout or challenge accordingly if I wasn't standing there. Normally, the special teams coaches wouldn't wear a headset, But in this instance, you know, we felt like that was the best thing to do.
Terry?
Mike, back on the run defense for a little bit. Have you noticed more missed tackles maybe in the first couple of weeks because there was no preseason or anything like that? And if so, is it more gap fits and bad angles or just not wrapping up?
No, I mean, sometimes there's a lot of things. I don't think that we didn't tackle terrible, in Jacksonville. You know, we didn't have a double-digit missed tackle game. We did yesterday, so we'll have to do a better job of limiting space for talented players and not putting it all on one guy. But, you know, that's a lot of times it's about space in this league with skill players.
Joe?
Back on the Bowen thing, Mike, you mentioned Aukerman having a different adjustment there. Did Hazlitt or anyone else on the defensive staff take on more Sunday?
Not more than what they normally would.
David?
Mike, right at the end of last season, you talked about the need to get off to a good start this season. At 3-0, with the two games you have coming up on the schedule, how excited are you about what you've accomplished and where you are to this point?
We're happy to be 3-0. You know, we're happy to have won. We have to play better. We have to coach better. You know, continue to improve. Get into a rhythm. You know, start taking advantage of the turnovers. There were things that we didn't do yesterday. We got some turnovers. Couldn't capitalize on a sudden change. Gave up too many big plays, too many explosive plays. So hopefully, you know, we can continue to kick the football well and then now start putting together all three phases of real consistent football that complements each other.
Do you look at a game like this one coming up, though, and tell your guys it's a big game, or do you try to make it as ordinary as possible this week?
You know, we get one opportunity a week. I think they're all big. You know, I think that when you only have 16 games in a season – you know, they're all important, and at the end of the season, they all count just as much. So, you know, this week's challenge is Pittsburgh. They bring obviously a fantastic defense, number one in a lot of categories. You know, the offense has been able to run the football. They've been very efficient throwing it. So there's a lot of problems that they bring that, you know, we'll have to be ready for.
Steve Lehman.
Mike, yeah, I guess I'll go back to the situation with Shane. Do you have any, because of people who came in contact with him or meeting rooms last week or anything, are you guys still working through any progress with that, or is all that done, and do you have any timetable for when you would expect him to be back?
I'd say we've followed all the protocols as it relates to COVID. That's all I'll say about it. And then as everything else, we're not into timetables or returns to play or coach.
Buck?
Yeah, Coach, you guys are leading the league right now in turnover differential. I guess, what are you seeing from your guys to create those turnovers, and what are they doing right within the scheme?
We got good pressure on interception yesterday. Which forced it. You know, we're swarming to the ball. You know, I think that, you know, Dalvin's came out. We had a couple other guys that were punching for it. You have to look for opportunities. I know, you know, Malcolm was around, you know, the out of bounds and punched at it, missed a tackle. I don't think we'd really want to see that. But I saw Jayon hit at one when he was making a tackle where the ball was on our sidelines, and it kind of came a little loose. But it didn't come out, but I think you have to keep looking for opportunities. I think guys were trying to match the quarterback's hand. You know, we have to tip some more footballs and try to get it away from the quarterback, you know, when he's in the pocket. So it's about an awareness of where the ball is on any given time during the play, who has it, and what you know, really coached to do as far as try to get it out, hammer, rake it, match the hand, you know, reading the eyes of the quarterback or just staying, making sure you're matching your guy in man coverage.
And then within your guys' defense, is there much opportunity for guys, particularly up front, to kind of, I mean, maybe freelance isn't the best word, but do you allow them to have that freedom when they're out there on the field?
To freelance? I mean, yeah, that's always going to go on. We have to improve it and make sure that it's coordinated. You know, when you start freelancing and, you know, I'm just trying to make a play. You know, I hope we try to make it a good one, because what happens is then you open up something else and then somebody else has to make up for you. And, you know, we need to communicate better. We have to make sure that everybody's sound in what we're doing. And then there's a certain element of going and making a play and being a football player. So I hate to use the word freelance, but any of our players on our team have the ability to effectively do their job, you know, in a manner in which they need to do it, as long as it's sound and it's coordinated.
Thanks, Mike.
John?
Mike, I know you said you're following all the protocols. I was wondering, in that protocol, when do you guys get the next round of results back in terms of COVID testing? And, you know, I guess which would obviously determine if any players were affected.
You know, again, I've said about all I'm going to say as it relates to our COVID-19 protocol, other than we're following the 100 memos that they've sent out verbatim. And so we'll keep you updated on on the roster as it relates to that and who has to be out and who doesn't. But that's about all I'm going to say on the COVID topic.
Sure. A couple guys just wondering if they might have a chance of getting on the field this week. Isaiah and Adori, any thoughts on that?
It's a little early in the week, John, but I think that, you know, we're hopeful that they could maybe practice. We'll see kind of where they're at. Would really like to see Isaiah and you know, be able to continue to work with him and get him to improve and evaluate him. So hopefully that'll happen. I'll have some more, I think, maybe as the week goes on. It's just a little early here, being Monday. But, you know, hopefully those are two good candidates to try to get back to practice.
Thanks.
A couple more, Jim.
Mike, after watching film, who are some guys that maybe qualified for game balls with a performance on Sunday?
You know, I'd like to have the opportunity to talk to the team first, Jim. You know, I mean, I just the way that this schedule is and the fact that, you know, we haven't met with the players is something that, you know, just out of respect for them, just to be able to recognize those guys in front of the team. So it was a great team win. There's a lot of players that contributed to the victory. Obviously, Steven Goskowski had a special day for us. We needed it. They played really well in the red zone. We did not. He had to kick a lot of field goals. Had 3 over 50 yards. So, you know, really, I would say that the best player out on the field yesterday for us would have been our kicker.
And Clowney has not gotten a sack yet, but he's shown up with some pressures. I mean, do you see improvement from him from week to week?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, I think he's, you know, he's had some disruptive plays and had some things where he's done, you know, a nice job. And, you know, we'll hopefully be able to get some more sacks from everybody. But I did feel like there were some opportunities yesterday where we affected the quarterback. And he might have just gotten it out or dumped it out of there or whatever he did. I thought we did a better job and an improved job of affecting him, and we just have to continue to do that. We were better on third and fourth down yesterday. But it was just the X plays, you know. So get that fixed and keep improving.
Steve?
Mike, I wasn't a math major in college, but if I got this correct, I think Derrick Henry's on pace for 457 carries in the regular season. You and him have talked a lot about how you believe he's durable and capable of the heavy workloads. But are you concerned at all about that trajectory through 3 weeks?
Is that a record? What's the record?
I don't know that off the top of my head, but that would be a lot.
You know, we're just trying to do what we feel like gives us the best chance to win each and every week, Steve. And, you know, that it's a lot of carries if that is what it ends up being. But, you know, we'll be conscious. Joe Rex Roach chiming in here. Larry Johnson's got the record, 406. So it would be a record, is it? That's not our goal. Our goal is to win. Actually, the record's 416. But our goal is to win, Steve, and obviously, you know, make sure that everybody's ready to go each and every week. You saw the effectiveness that Derek had down the stretch for us, which was absolutely critical, you know, to our success. So, you know, we'll keep working guys in there, and we'll keep trying to stay balanced and do everything we can to keep winning.
Last one, Teresa.
Mike, just a numbers situation. Adoree was put on IR September 14th, not eligible to come back until after 3 weeks. Would that be next Monday by my math?
Steve was the math major, or maybe he wasn't the math major. I don't know. Maybe it would be another week. We'll see. You know, that we'll find out when you can start practicing, and if he's healthy enough to practice, we'll try to get him back out there. And I'll have more of an answer for you, Teresa, on Wednesday. You know, but right now, you know, he still is on the short-term IR.
All right, thanks, Coach. Appreciate it.
Okay, there you thank go. You, guys.
Titans head coach Mike Vrabel, his weekly chat following their Sunday tilt. And today talking about a 3-0 Titans team as they get ready for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Willie, what's some things that jumped out at you?
Well, of course, the first thing that has got to be sorted out is the story that came down the pike just minutes before the press conference, is that Shane Bowen wasn't there.
Yeah.
Shane Bowen, who is not by title the defensive coordinator, but regardless of his label, he's an intricate part of the game planning and the execution of the game plan on game day. So the fact that they won the entire game yesterday without him there is a story in itself. But now going forward, maybe the bigger question is, and Mike Vrabel was as limited as he possibly could be other than to say, we are following all of the, as he called it, the 100 memos, the 100-plus memos.
He made a point to say that, yes.
We are following the protocols verbatim. But it does make you wonder, are there some other tests, some other things that have to sort themselves out if Shane Bowen was on the, for COVID reasons, couldn't coach because of the contact tracing? He didn't say Shane Bowen contracted the virus, but he was not able to be with the team. So we know that they're being very careful about tracing. If you've been exposed to somebody that's had it, maybe a family member has it, it could be any number of things. The next round of testing might have to give you the clearance that everything's okay there. And so your mind wanders, right? And Mike Vrabel chose not to offer any reassurance of any kind. Like, he could have said, hey, this is not going to affect any of the players.
Yep.
He stopped short of saying that. So it does make you wonder, and maybe we're just speculating, or maybe, you know, worrying worst case scenario and hoping that it's not. But I mean, that's something to watch for the next 24 to 48 hours.
It sounded like they got wind of this on Saturday, right? Did I hear that correctly?
I think that's what Vrabel said, yes.
So this is a little bit different than the Dean Pease situation, and maybe that affected why they were, you know, gashed so badly yesterday on defense. But, you know, the Dean Pease situation in Indianapolis last year was was early in the game.
Right, that was during, yeah, that was, couldn't have planned for that.
Right.
Like so Shane at least Bowen, they had a day to figure out who was going to make the calls, how we're going to take Shane's
right.
responsibilities. I guess it made it sound like he couldn't travel with them.
Yes,
right?
Correct. Well,
so
yeah,
it's a good thing that they figured this out before he was on a plane with them or in meeting rooms after that, if that was a question. And we don't know the specifics of what the story is with Bowen, but you know, for in the league, we thought the league would be littered with stuff like this, right? And this would be a problem every week. So this is one. I hope it's something simple and it's kept just to him. And hopefully he can coach by Sunday. But we don't have answers to any of those questions based on what we just heard. So that was a curveball.
Well, one of the things that jumped out at me is Derrick Henry is on pace for 457 carries this year. And when Joe,
by Steve Lehman's math.
When Mike Vrabel was asked about that, it was by Steve Lehman, News Channel 5.
So we're trusting that Steve's math is proper.
Well, Mike Vrabel, the head coach, wanted to know, what is the record?
Yeah,
and then
it took about 10 seconds to pull it up on Football Reference. And so I know a lot of people who were curious did.
But the problem is Joe Rexroth threw out 406 Larry Johnson with the Kansas City Chiefs, and Mike Vrabel was quick to correct Joe Rexroth at 416. At the time when we heard all that, I wanted to know who was right. Was it the head coach or
right.
was it the columnist? Well, we have learned pretty quickly that it was the head coach.
The head coach, who I think was probably handed a note by his.
Yes.
It was Teron. Teron in the comments said 416, and yeah. then Vrabel read off Teron's comment.
Okay. So Larry Johnson for the Chiefs.
Because I didn't hear him say, did he credit Teron? I didn't hear him say
he
that.
He did not. He did not give proper credit to Teron.
I figured it was Robbie Boren, you know, probably handing him a note saying, hey, 416.
But it does have to come back to earth, right? It does have to they can't have a guy carrying it 450 times. First of all, it's never been done. Larry Johnson, the other alarming thing, let's just look at the top five. The only five running backs who have ever carried it over 400 times in a season. Now, forget about if your team makes the playoffs and you play a few more games, which is certainly what the Titans want to have happen. Larry Johnson, 416 in 2006.
Yep.
Jamal Anderson, 410 in 1998 for the Falcons, the team that went to the Super Bowl. If I remember correctly, is that right?
Yes.
Yes, they lost to the Broncos.
They beat the Vikings in the NFC
Championship.
Yeah,
that was the year.
Game.
James Wilder, 407 for the Buccaneers of 84. Eric Dickerson, 404 in 1986 for the Rams. And Eddie George, 403 in 2000. Now, what do all those running backs, with the exception of Eric Dickerson, have in common? They all had a huge fall off the following year. Yep. And it's a well-told story. Football Outsiders is the first that I ever saw. They even track it back to 370 carries is about the threshold. Any running back that's had 370 or more in a season, with the exception of Eric Dickerson, who seems to be the one guy immune, because he shows up on the list. You know, you don't even think top of your mind Eric Dickerson is so durable, but he was. But almost to a person, the production begins to drop off immediately the following year. Eddie George, remember, the turf toe. The following year, he was never quite the same. It's not like he was bad, but he started to decline after that 2000 season where he was awesome and had 403 carries.
Yeah. What was I'm trying to think. Was Gurley anywhere near? He never because he had so many receiving yards, right? So I guess it's not.
Right. It seems to be the carries. It's not. It's not as much the touches when you add in the catches from out of the backfield. So I guess you don't take as much contact, I'm guessing, when you get it out
right.
of the backfield. You're more towards the sideline. A lot of times you're not getting crushed by three or four guys or multiple hits on the same play. But Larry Johnson, 2006, 416 carries at age 26. So the following year, got hurt. Played only 8 games, 559 yards. That's just, there's one example. We just told you what happened to Eddie George. Jamal Anderson, in 1998, 410 carries, 1,846 yards. The next year, played two games, tore his ACL, out for the season. Was never the same after that. He did bounce back and play again in 2000, but you know, his career was over a couple years later. Now, he was 32. No, he wasn't. He was 26 when he had. So he was done by age 30. It's just a really tough. This is why it's such a tricky thing with running backs in the workload. So I get it. Like, in the game, what would you do? Why would you not give it to Derrick Henry? He wanted the ball more down the stretch. But this is the dilemma you get in when the games are so close and you don't have a game that's a blowout one way or the other to curtail it. Now, you figure that there some of those will be coming. But that's something to watch for.
Well, another stat is, aren't they undefeated? They've never lost when he's run for over 100 yards, right? Never.
They've never lost. And I think their record, I think they've never lost when he's even carried it 20-something times. Is it 25 or 26? Like, when he gets that many carries, they've never lost.
Right.
How because usually that means
down when you've got that going in your favor.
Yeah, because usually you run when you're ahead. Usually you're ahead and you're killing the clock and he's putting them away. But in all three cases so far this year, you've had razor's edge games where he's had to go win the game and not in like a comeback situation or a big way behind comeback situation.
We'll come back and start the final hour. We'll talk to Nick Suss. We always enjoy our talks with him from the Clarion Ledger. Mississippi State got big headlines in the college football world on Saturday night. They had a huge win over LSU. We touched on it briefly earlier in the show. We're going to go a little bit more in depth with him to start the final hour of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.